We spent a lot of time educating people because people's thoughts of an estate sale, Warren Buffett has an estate, right? So he would need an estate sale, but other normal people don't need an estate sale, right? Or only people that die need an estate sale. And so once you educate people what we do and how we can add value and help them, once they get it, we're in.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Bob Lang, president with Blue Moon Estate Sales. Today, we're discussing an asymmetrical investment and the lowest investment we've had on the show to date, how this business benefits from the silver tsunami, and how this low investment, work from home, low labor model is now producing seven figures in revenue. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guest are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
I've heard people in real estate talk about the four D's: death, divorce, default, and downsizing. Who is having an estate sale today, and why is now a good time to be in this business? What are you seeing out there?
So as people are aging and, you know, people are moving and moving around like that, there's a demand because think of the previous generations that accumulated a lot of stuff. And so when you're moving from upstate New York because you just love the weather up there and you want to go to Florida, you're not going to need a snowblower. You're not going to need other stuff. And so people that are in the downsizing, right after COVID, we were going like crazy with downsizing. It's still a big part of our business. Death, obviously, when people are dying, dealing with a personal property is a big thing. I would say divorce, we do have that sometimes. It's probably the lowest of the three, but death, downsizing, followed by divorce. When you need it, you need it. And it's overwhelming. You know, like you said, if something's happened, dad's passed away and mom is going into a facility and the kids are out of town, how are you going to handle this stuff? And that's why you need an expert to come in. It's stressful personally. And our goal is to come in there, relieve the stress, to provide a service. And remember, too, the other thing is we're the opening act here. The main draw in a lot of these cases is the house, which was what makes us so attractive. We can partner with and we work very closely with our referral sources. And our job is to get in there and to help to have a good transition plan, to understand what the client wants to achieve, get the personal property taken care of, get it cleared out so the realtor can come in and get the house sold. We're able to help the realtors because one of our selling propositions is, look, we bring thousands of eyeballs into that sale. We're promoting it. And so people will look and they'll not only see the personal property, but they'll also see the house. A lot of times they'll ask, oh, wow, what a great looking house. Who's the listing agent on it? You know, has it been on the market? So we can partner with realtors to help move stuff, which makes us invaluable.
I like it. We actually spoke to a guy in Canada, Justin, if you remember, that was in this space, nothing like what you're doing. We met you actually years ago at a trade show, the Franchise National Events. This is pre-COVID. When did you start franchising, Bob?
In 2020. I'm right in the heart of COVID. I came in right during the middle of COVID as the brand president.
Because I remember meeting a young guy, and I think his mom was involved. Is that
David Blue? So David, you met David, and this was the IFA top concept of the year several years ago. That's where you probably saw David. His mom, Deb Blue, and Ken Blue are the co-founders of the business. Deb's a physician, retired now, and she and her husband loved antiquing, and they really gave us a wonderful system to build on. And so that's what I've been doing the last 5 years here. David joined the business right after he got out of college. The rest is history.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. Give us the elevator pitch, who you are, what you do. And then, because I have a series of questions that I want to wrap my head around this model.
Bob Lang, brand president of Blue Moon Estate Sales. What we do is we help people during their transition to downsize and to personal property liquidation. It's a, you know, you can call it whatever you want, but basically we take care of the stuff that's in the people's homes. And we help liquidate. We take the stress off of people by providing a pop-up retail experience. We're able to go ahead and conduct that in a short time frame. And then we get a check to the client's hands within 5 to 7 business days. And we clear it out so that the realtor, whoever else, is able to come in there and deal with the other issues in the house.
Justin, I have a series of questions, and of course, interject here, but I'm trying to understand, how are you acquiring the client? Like, what avenues are you playing in that you're getting that, I'll call it first notice of loss, right? We were in a restoration business. They called it FNOL. How are you getting the FNOL, if you will?
Yeah. So our leads come in through multiple sources. Our owners are very active on the marketing side. And so we're very active in terms of social media posting. Our Best Light Brands, Blue Moon is part of Best Light Brands, our parent company, 743 locations across the country. We are very active on marketing and promoting the business through search engine optimization, organic search, pay-per-click. People are finding us, sell my stuff. So they're coming to us that way. We are actively out there networking in the community. The biggest thing is that when we're networking, we're involved with realtors, estate planning professionals. We're going to facilities. And so we're developing relationships with referral sources. And that's our primary resource, right? Once people know who we are, it starts to build off of there. And then, of course, our owners are very active. You're talking about it all the time because people always ask, what do you do? And then they say, well, I'm at Blue Moon. Oh, you're the beer guy. It's like, yeah, that's me. I'm the beer guy, right? No, but they remember Blue Moon. What do you do? Oh my God, my mom could use that. And my neighbor, her husband or her dad's having some trouble. He would be great for you guys. I'll go ahead and give her your name. So we get a lot of word of mouth advertising. And so really those are how the leads come in. Also, you mentioned too, like the MLS listing or other stuff. When stuff happens, we're tracking what's going on. We're connected in. And so we're getting notified pretty early in the process that we're able to get in there and do a consultation and see if it's something that we could do an estate sale for.
What would be a number one referral source? Like, this is a lock. If you weighted referral sources, who's heavily weighted?
Realtors, and then followed by probably facilities, estate planning attorneys that we have our word of mouth. Actually, our owners, once they get going, our owners would probably tell you over time, probably between realtors and then just word of mouth. Leads just come in and then they're referred by a friend or stuff like that.
Businesses that market to realtors are great businesses because these are the easiest to find people on the planet. And they want to be found, realtors. Like, they answer their phone, return calls. They're on park benches at bus stops. We have a couple guys, we buy investment properties. I pass our guys at bus stops and park benches. These guys have their faces on the side of the road.
And anything you could do to make their life easier, help them sell homes faster for more money without having to put a lot of work into it, they love it.
We will. And we do that. If you look at our locations and the social media, our owner is really out there and we're promoting it. We got this beautiful house here, gorgeous 20th century house. And it's in this beautiful subdivision. We've got this great stuff, right? And then come on by. We're giving them free marketing. And then for the realtors, like you said, Justin, just echo on that. The realtors are under the gun. The last thing they want is somebody coming in there and screwing up their client and screwing up the situation. They have a problem. And so what I like to tell our owners is, look, guys, we're not in the estate sale business. What we're in is the business of selling and marketing estate sale services. We do that by building amazing teams, and then we have awesome events. We really deliver the goods on the events. And so our main focus is we are trying to help solve a problem. And that's kind of one of the reasons I got into the business when I was recruited was I was the same thing as you initially. You were saying before, you know, estate sales. My grandmother used to go to those things. I still have some of the stuff, teapots and other things that she bought. I didn't quite get it. They would go every week and they would make a day of it. It was like, holy cow, these guys actually have like a cult following here. I mean, in a good way, we have a loyalty program. So it was a whole industry.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
My mom, if you went over her house, she'll show you something. She has to tell you what she paid for it. She goes to auctions. She goes to a place here in town called Faith Farm. It's just a consignment, not even a, people dropped it off for free for a tax deduction. It's like a rehab facility. So the people working there are all in rehab. everyone donates their stuff. My mom goes, it just, she pays nothing for this stuff. She loves it.
And then she repurposes the stuff, which is very popular now, right? Taking old furniture and...
She repurposes it, repaints it.
Yeah, the repurposing, that's one of the big things too that's really nice about estate sales that I think appeals to a lot of owners. We're trying to keep stuff out of the garbage or out of the trash. Repurposing things is really good. We're active on the back end with clear outs or clean outs. If we're, you know, we're inevitably going to have some items that won't sell during a sale. So partnering with charities or other places to put the items to good use. You mentioned the refurbishing. We have a lot of owners that will buy old piece of furniture and then strip it down, you know, repaint it, restain it, other stuff like that, repurpose it. And I think the environmental aspect is something that really appeals to a lot of our customers. We're not just landfilling it.
That's right.
Feels good when keeping stuff out, and the treasure hunt and all the other parts of it are just, that's just what makes this industry unique.
So now we understand. So I'm going to use this scenario. I'm going to walk through this model. So I'm going to use death because I think death is the biggest piece. From some of the data I looked up, it looked like 57% of these estate sales are death, followed by downsizing. And then, as you said, like divorce. So let's just say we have a deceased couple. They get with a realtor. Realtor contacts Blue Moon. How will you create? This is not, we're going to advertise this. And correct me if I'm wrong. You're not packaging, boxing, bubble wrapping, and sending Hummels to Arizona from Florida. You're asking people that live locally to become aware of this event. How are you doing that? How are you creating instant awareness for an estate sale?
Great question. So it starts with that first call. And what we'll do is we'll do a consultation with the client and we'll actually meet with the person. And we want to be respectful too in that situation where someone has died. Emotions are really high, which is one of the reasons bringing in a professional estate sale company like Blue Moon is really good, because oftentimes you're going to have the kids or other people involved in this and you're getting rid of mom's stuff. Oh my God, that China hutch. I can't believe you're going to do that, you know? And so we can take the emotion out of it and we'll come in, we'll do the consultation. And is it something that we feel we can do our best work on? Meaning our best work, are we going to be able to draw enough people to have a good sale? If we can't do an estate sale, that's okay, because there are other options or solutions that we could find. We can try and refer to other people, but we want to always try and leave the client in a better place, no matter what happens. But assuming it's estate sale worthy, immediately we'll coordinate the staging and the pricing of the house. We'll deploy teams. And so our owners, one of the advantages that we have is that we can move very quickly. Our teams are trained, and so they're able to go in and we can take a house, turn it, stage it, price it, get photography done, usually within a few days. We can move very quickly. And then on a tight timeline, we can conduct the sale in about, most of the times, 2 days. You know, usually you have in the estate sale business, the first day at full price, the second day would be discounting, and then we're done. The promoting of the sale will do different ways. To get to that point, we have our own website, www.bluemoonestatesales.com. And so we have people that go there, and we have in our loyalty program approximately 150,000 people. And every week we're sending out about 110,000 newsletters. And so we're promoting these sales. In addition to that, owners will use other stuff such as maybe estatesales.net. And so we're literally having probably thousands of people that are looking at these items. And then we have not only the people in the area, but we'll invite our realtors or other ones. And so we'll get really good traction for the event. And that's what we want. That's the beauty of the estate sale, is really creating that anticipation and excitement. When I moved to North Carolina, I went with David Blue and we were at one of their sales. It was like 8:30 in the morning, typical August day here in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's like 95 degrees and humid. And there's this long line of people out there waiting. And how they seen about us, oh yeah, we got your newsletter. We were looking online for sales this week. And the sale had already started. They were just sitting there having a good old time. And they couldn't wait to get in there at the stop. And then they said, here's the kicker. Oh yeah, there's another sale. It's like 10 minutes away. And so after we get done with this one, we're going to go over there. That was right after I started. It's like that told me right there, that kind of loyalty that we inspire among people. And I didn't appreciate it. It's like, that's a privilege. These people are choosing to come and spend their money and come out and do that because of the treasure hunt. Customers are all over the board. I mean, I've gotten stuff in estate sales, sports memorabilia, got a nice Stan Musial autograph ball. I got a nice letter from Franklin Roosevelt.
I see up your shoulder. I saw the...
Yeah, I got a lot of different stuff here, sports memorabilia. You know, people come because they're looking for certain items. People are coming for the value. So the treasure hunt, you know, they're looking for the treasure. So they collect their certain stuff. People are looking for the value. We'll get resellers sometimes coming that are looking for stuff. They want certain items. We got a lot of people who are looking like precious metals. So we sell, you know, you mentioned, you know, we'll have jewelry, silver, gold, metals like that we handle. We will sell automobiles. So we've had, we actually sold a 1982 DeLorean a few months ago.
Sure.
So yeah, we will sell a Steinway piano. We had a 1922 Steinway D piano that was pretty cool to see. We were trying to figure out actually if Rachmaninoff had potentially played it at one point. We were trying to track that back. Those don't obviously happen every day, but those are just kind of the weird things you see. And then, you know, the other nice thing now, especially with what was happening in the economy with inflation and the supply chain kinks and everything like that, what's really good is we got stuff. Once we got through COVID and we were able to figure out mapping and coordinating logistically with each of the state's requirements, we were rolling because we had stuff. Our supply chains were kinked, people were selling. And so we just had to make sure that we did it safely, which we did. We were able to get going. And now estate sales are a great place for people to find good value things. We've seen, especially, I think there's been more of a trend towards everyday value items, right? At least to find it, kitchen items, things like that, a good value. You don't have to go pay full retail and you can have a good shopping experience. So it really meets a lot of different needs, in my opinion.
I like that.
Bob, you mentioned that the founders were passionate about antiques, right? So they had a good understanding of this stuff. For someone who is not, or even if someone's passionate about sports memorabilia, but they don't know about artwork or they don't know about vintage watches, right? I mean, my concern would be like those stories that you hear that someone picked up this painting for $5 at a garage sale and it's worth $10 million. How do you know how to price all this stuff? How does the franchisee know how to price everything properly?
Yeah, that's something that I think every owner thinks about. So the way we address it is we have our owners go through an extensive training. We do a 3-week training with the owners. A large part of it is around pricing. Many of the items when we go through is identifying what has value in the house. And so those kind of examples we go through, and basically I would tell any owner, what are the items that you think have value? And then it's researching. So a lot of it is identifying the items that you think have value and then putting in the time to do the research. To your question, we will partner with auctioneers, art appraisers, jewelers, okay? And we encourage our owners, look, you don't have to be the expert at everything. You need to identify things that have value. Your job is to get the best bang for the buck for your client, to do right by them. If that means bringing in an outside appraiser or an expert to do it, go for it, right? And again, if we came across that example where we've got this massive multi-million dollar painting or something, we would be the first to say, look, the best venue to sell this might not be at an estate sale. We may partner with a local, an auction house or something, because our goal ultimately is to meet the needs of the client and to do the best thing. And so if that means working with our partners locally or even like a Sotheby's or something, we'll do it. So that's how. And we don't claim to be the expert on every item. We will go ahead and identify things we think have value, but there's some items you come across that are really unique. There was a painting that one of our owners had, the Blue Bonnets of Texas, and there was a Mexican artist or something, and it was up here in North Carolina. And the owner just happened to know the person, but what's it worth? So we had an appraiser, we were able to do some research on it and came up with a good value on the item, right? We identified it, there's value, how much? And it's subjective, because remember too, what we're doing is the value is relative. We're selling secondhand on a lot of items.
You ever see that show, American Pickers?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Those guys are able to walk into a barn anywhere in America and just like pick through. And it's like, I want that, this is valuable, that isn't. And they know exactly how much everything is worth. It's unbelievable.
Tools, we've got some really great barn sales, and you're selling the tractors and you got the trailers and you got, you know, all the other things like that. Tools are wonderful. Tools are, you know, at estate sales and stuff like that. Those are always items that sell. And so our orders are very good. We can go in and pretty much we'll get it staged. And then the pricing on those things, and the owners, especially once they've been doing a little bit, you get a really good feel for what moves in your marketplace, because each of the markets are different. And those are tried and true. Tools, precious metals, jewelry, silver, stuff like that, guaranteed money. Those items will always sell.
It's true. Do you remember Storage Wars?
Yeah.
Yep.
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 Yeah.
Yeah.
Dave Hester.
Yeah. He wanted to punch in the one time.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave. He got it. They got, I think he was a whistleblower that they were planting valuable items.
Brandy.
There was a court case.
Right. That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. He ended up getting in trouble. Do you remember the guy with the white hair that used to unlock the unit.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that guy? He and his wife, they were like coordinating the don't cross the line. He actually bought a locker for $500. There was a safe in it, $7.5 million cash.
Oh my God.
But he didn't keep it. He ended up getting served by an attorney, and the attorney's client that owned that locker offered him $600,000 to return the $7.5 million. And the guy said, I settled for $1.5 million because I was afraid how far would they go if I said no. And he gave it back. $7.5 million in cash inside the safe, but he walked away with $1.5 million on a $500 spend.
You mentioned that scenario, but one of the things we spend a lot of time training on, you know, is we go through our core values at Blue Moon. I think they're kind of unique to us. When I joined the company and the Blues were explaining them, I'd never heard them before there. Before, you know, the first is like having a growth mindset. You know, you're always seeing different stuff. And so we always are looking for owners that are constantly, they love to learn. Every situation, these are like snowflakes, these houses, they're all different. And so you have to always have a growth mindset, and not everything's going to work out. Grit was our second one, which I absolutely loved. The grit part was good because, you, as you guys know, any business starting out, you need to have grit. Not every day is going to go perfect. But then the accountability, the communication, and integrity. And the accountability is good, you know, because I like to talk with our people coming in, and we practice it in our system. You know, we're accountable as the franchisor for what we do. And then the franchisees, we're entrusting with our brand in the area. What goes around comes around. And so having good events and really being professional really represents the brand. And then the integrity piece is a big deal. Of course, everybody, you know, every brand you probably talk with, they have integrity, right? But we're going into people's homes. People are in distress. Oftentimes we may be dealing with someone that may have mental, there could be a cognitive defect, something like dementia or something. And so we train around that. And your point, we come across money, personal letters, all sorts of stuff like that. And so we have to always make sure we're acting, because that's our brand. That's our hallmark. You know, we're a service-based industry. And then the communication piece, I've been doing this a long time. And usually if there's been an issue on the communication front, you can tie it back a few strokes and say, hey, if we'd done a better job communicating, we'd be better. And so we're very active on open communication with our franchisees. That's something that we really practice. So that's, I think that's what makes us kind of unique in this space here.
I have to trust, right, that you can identify value. That was the point of actually bringing up the Storage Wars comment, was they did a season recap with that really young couple. And in the season recap, they said to the young couple, what did you learn this year? And he said something that I never thought I would hear from these two. He goes like this, I learned that I need to expand my valuation expert network. I'm bidding on these lockers. People are seeing things that I can't see. Once I secure the locker, I got to bring in my people. I mean, look at the pawn shop guy. They bring in experts all the time. Hey, what's this sword worth? It's like, do you know what you're holding? No, it's a sword. No, it's not. This sword happens to be from this era, this time. Do you know what photograph that is? No, that's an Andy Warhol. That's when he started screen printing art instead of painting it. It's like, whoa, how would I know this shit?
I would think, but at some point, shouldn't we be able to take a picture and have AI like tell us what this thing is?
Using that's kind of what Google Lens or reverse search and stuff like that's using kind of basic AI, you're 100% correct. And so for a lot of the items there, we use the internet and the technology out there to help in the search. That's part of the research. And part of the thing is identifying what exactly do you have, identifying comps. We use different valuation methods. And so, yeah, trying to get it nailed down sometimes too. We had a case where owner came across some jewelry, turned out to be Navajo jewelry. Okay. And unique pieces. And so the owner, we were able to get some, but then we talked, we're part of the, you know, the American Society of Estate Liquidators, we're credited by them. And so we follow certain standards, but working with them, we're able to help get a little beat on, holy cow, this is what this jewelry is, right? It's unique and it had certain measures. And so we're able to figure out what we had there. And sometimes it's not always clear cut. And the other thing you got to look is what's real and what's fake. So we trained to that, you know, you could have is it a Tiffany lamp or is it a replica Tiffany?
The watches today are so good, Bob.
The reps are unbelievable. In many cases now, you have to take them apart to really know. The reps are so good.
The other nice thing too is that being the size that we're at, and we've grown, we're 128 locations across the United States. And so as we've grown, we've gotten a lot more owners. And so what's nice is we have an interactive, you know, our group, we have an internal group where the owners can talk with each other. If you know, we had an owner who loved comic books, you want to know anything about comic books, call. Got another owner who knows everything about space, right? Or, you know, literally like outer space. We've got a really good group. And so owners are able to talk amongst themselves and get an idea of what they're looking at, which can help the search. They don't have to do everything on their own.
What are your costs to do this? It's their home, it's their electric, right? What are your costs to do the event? I'm trying to understand now the money flow. You don't have a cost of goods because they provided the inventory of the product. And I'm trying to understand from that question, what's the split? What are you giving the homeowner, I'll call them, and then what are you keeping?
Largest cost on your P&L is going to be the commission split that you talk about. So if you go down on our P&L, you know, we've got the commission. And so the commission is going to be based on a number of factors. We train on that. And basically, you're looking at the complexity of the sale, how much work's going to need to be involved with it, how large is the sale. There's a lot of different factors. So there'll be a split, usually based on a base amount to cover costs plus a percentage above that. Usually a low percentage, and then a bulk of it goes to the client. The really biggest cost is going to be the labor piece. And so the labor cost is something that we work on very closely with our owners, because these are by far the two biggest items on the P&L. And so we have tools we've developed to help the owners estimate the labor. Picture, you know, what I would tell any owner is if you were an archer and you've got two targets you're shooting at. One's your revenue target, one's your labor target. We train our owners, we work with them on identifying what will this house ultimately generate in revenue? How much labor are you going to have to put into this? And there's a lot that goes into that calculation, but we will use our tools to help train them. And then ultimately, this is once you start doing this, you start developing an eye for the revenue, you start developing an eye for the labor. And then we'll say no more times than we'll say yes to potential estate sales. Either it's not going to have enough revenue or yeah, but it's a hoarder house and look at all the work we're going to have to do on it. And so this would be something better where we could call one of our partners maybe for a clear out or something. It's just not something we're going to be able to put our best work on. We couldn't, or there's not enough stuff here to draw enough of an audience. There's not enough other stuff of interest. We don't think it would be able to bring enough people out. And ultimately too, it's our reputation. People know us, they know Blue Moon. And so they have for certain standards. We don't want to be a junk sale or a yard sale. This is a completely different thing. So we want to make sure we adhere our standards. Realtors wouldn't want that either. Last thing they want is a real junk. We want to make sure we give them a professional, real experience. And if we can't do that, we'll find another solution for their client.
What's the sweet spot then? I'm not touching an estate sale less than $8,000, $5,000.
We would go ahead and it depends. You could do smaller sales. Again, if you're covering your cost and you have a minimum, if it gets below a certain point, probably on the lower end of the range you were saying about there, we would never say no. If you're a brand new owner coming out, what we trade is look. The thing is protecting your profitability, which is a passion of mine. And you can make a buck at it, but the client may not make anything. Client has a problem. And so if we're going to do this, all the proceeds may go to us. And so we'll do that. Ideally, though, over time, what happens is the owners get better. You start identifying the more valuable houses, what has more value. And so we see the average ticket usually moving up. The other thing, too, that we've seen, which has been really good, is as we've gotten bigger, is the frequency of the sales. And so once the owners get going here and you start getting repetition, you start getting one sale a week, then guess what? Hey, there's enough demand in here. What about doing two sales in a week, right? And so that's one of the nice parts about the models. We're able to scale it because here you're not having to add a lot of fixed inventory, fixed cost. You might have to purchase, say, a trailer. So many of our owners will have, you'll see a Blue Moon trailer going around, which is great because you're hauling tables from point A to point B. You've got supplies. You have all the other stuff for the sale. So you have some small investment in those things, but it's very easy to scale the model because other than adding some technology, we have a retail system that we use that enables us to really move the sales along. You don't have to add a lot of cost. Your biggest additional cost is your variable cost. It's your labor. And so, you know, you need to have a team, right? But you cover that in your pricing. So it's very profitable, but there's a lot of logistics you have to work through. That's the beauty of this model. You have to figure out the logistics and working them through, but you don't have to add a lot of fixed cost to scale.
And the team is, so these events are done on the weekends, I would think, Saturdays and Sundays.
Some on Fridays, but generally, yeah, I would say weekends okay. For the most part.
So we're having a team come in. These are part-time people who work on the weekends to help do the heavy lifting, organizing.
Yeah. What's really interesting is the dynamic of the teams. So it's primarily part-time employees. And we've got a combination on your team. If you picture what we're doing the staging, the pricing, the photography for the sale, the event itself. picture your sports team. You know, you got to have a first baseman. You got to, is he left-handed or right-handed? You know, what do you have in your bullpen? What's the depth of your bench? So really the key here is building out a big bench that's flexible, because not everybody is available during the week. Not everybody is good at the pricing or the staging. You're probably going to want to have some muscle because there are going to be the heavier items. And so having some guys can move that around. You're going to want to have the people then who don't want to be involved in staging pricing, but they love schmoozing and talking to the customers, and you want them at those events, right? You're going to want to have some people that are good with the technology, because we have our POS system. We have the ability for owners to take credit cards and we can move it along, but you want people that are comfortably using that. The key is you got to build the team. And then for the owners, the big thing is obviously developing out your leaders and building the people that can grow the, you know, can help you in the organization and scale your business. And to the extent you're building them out and you're building out this really good mix of people and getting them to work together, that's going to enable you to grow.
So let's use a $10,000 estate sale. What does the labor model look like? Just walk me, I'm trying to wrap my head around. I called you. I've got about 10 grand worth of stuff, smalls as you call it. I've got everything. No cars, just stuff. 10 grand.
So staging and pricing, if you start off with it, you know, we do our consultation and typically, let's take it's a standard, maybe 3,000 square foot house. Like you said, standard amount of items. We will deploy a team probably around 5 or 6 people. It depends. If we have a bigger size house, we will put more people onto it. Most of the owners will tell you that they will be able to stage and get that house staged and priced 2 to 3 business days. Okay. Whatever the time is, take the number of hours you would have into the staging times the number of people you have on it. The hourly rate will vary based on the state or based on where you are locally. Then the pricing itself, a lot of the pricing is pretty straightforward. Once you've been doing this, a spoon's a spoon's a spoon, right? A lot of the stuff, and we train to, there are things that are just not worth touching multiple times. Get it done. Price it, move it on, right?
Get it out, yeah.
Versus the key where the time comes in, was to Justin, to your comment was, hey, we think this item has value. So identifying the items that have value, and then we do the research. We want to get it right. And so that can vary, but if you have people that know what they're doing on the team, that can go along pretty well. Your hours there will depend on the complexity of the house, but that's how you would calculate that. The photography itself usually can be done, I would say probably 3 to 5 hours. You've got, you know, we're going through and we're doing the photography. And so we train a lot on the photography. That's a subtle little part of this, because one of the ways people first learn about us is they see our sales online. And now if you're looking at a photo and you can't figure out what it is that you're trying to look at, you're probably going to pass on the sales. The events themselves will vary the starting time. Let's say they're probably, you know, 9 to 2 on the first day, second day, maybe 10 till 2 or 3, whatever it is. We'll have a cashier or two, depending on how big it's going to be. We use an Apple-based system. So everything is integrated, our tech stack, which is really nice. You'll have a person that will be introducing at the beginning of the sale, talking about the rules of engagement for coming to the sale and how we operate. You're going to want to have people kind of rovers going around, making sure helping people. Yeah, and on average, like I said, I would guess that we'll probably have around 5 or 6 people at that sale. Then we will coordinate the cleanup process at the end. That's pretty much the labor that's involved.
What do you do with that? So it's 2 days.
2 days, 9 till 2, 9 till 3, roughly 5 people, give or take a day for a standard house and whatever your labor rate. And that would give you an idea of approximately what your labor would be for that sale.
In that 10 grand, give me an idea. What did the homeowner get? What did you keep? I'm trying to find out what the franchisees
make. So the client on that one would probably get, the split on the commission would probably be about 60%, let's say. So if you went through it, it would depend. But if you had a minimum and it was, let's say you were doing a 60-40 split with a client to keep the math easy, right? And so our objective in that case is to get the client money. We'd like to do that. And so there's other things that need to be done in the house. So the client needs to understand that we may need to get a trash bin or something like that, right? And so if there's other costs that we have in there, we'll go ahead and do that to make the house okay to do the sale. Then we want to go ahead and get the check into the client's hands. And again, part of it comes back to the psychology of what the client wants with the sale upfront. It's so important when you talk to them because, you know, the question is, what do you want to accomplish on this sale? People's motives are different. I don't care if I make a penny on this. I just got to get the stuff out of here so that we can get the house sold. I don't care. Other people, oh my God, this is going to take care of grandma moving into the assisted living facility and has to fund her for the next year.
We need 50 grand.
Right. What we will go through, we stress in our training, we really work hard on is setting expectations with a client. We train around the contract and really, you know, pointing out to the client what we're here to do, what we can do, what we don't do. We're not a junk company. We're here to conduct this event. and we're here to try and go ahead and meet your objectives. So we want to make sure we understand the client's objectives. We want to understand what the realtor's objectives too. What's their timeline, right? We don't want other people coming in and out of the house. So we'll set objectives, you know, if they're doing some refurb work or they're doing some work around the house, painting or other things like that to go on the market. The last thing they want is us bumping heads with their contractor or other people like that. So we're going to coordinate, right? We're there to make this good. And so we coordinate the event. And that's really a big piece of this thing is the communication, coordinating all the moving pieces. The primary thing here is this big house they want to sell. We're here to fulfill and solve a specific problem, try and get a check into their clients' hands, have a great experience. And by the way, if we do it right, we're going to promote that house because when people are coming through there, we will promote it. We'll have the realtor stuff out there. We'll talk about it so we can add other value that way. It's not necessarily making the biggest check here. It's meeting the client's objectives sometimes, which is not making a penny.
You're doing an open house for 2 days straight, literally.
That's exactly right.
What happens if man, we think we have a real score here, right? This is a great house. And for whatever reason, it wasn't a good weekend. Maybe the poor weather, or it's like, man, here we are Sunday night. We still have some really cool, valuable items that we know typically move. No one came to buy them. Are we doing another one? What do we do? What do we do with the rest of the stuff?
Depending on what you have, we generally will not consign items. So if there are specific things that we were surprised didn't move, weather, something like that, we would not probably want to go back unless there were so many items left at the house. If weather was the issue and we started and then all of a sudden weather happened and we didn't get the way through, we would work with the client and see what their timeline and objective. Sometimes we don't have the option. We got to be out of the house by the end of the month. We don't have the option of coming back. Then, okay, plan B. Here's what we can do. There are some items here that I know I could sell. And so we have the ability, we will consign items. And so we can go ahead and consign to other sales. So if you have a sale that, let's say, is heavy in furniture and other stuff, and it could really be bulked up with some smalls we have, let's say you had jewelry, precious metals, other things like that, where you could add it into the sale to bulk it up, we can do that. And then through our backend, through our system, we can keep track of these are person A's items, and these are the items from the current sale.
I'm going to go to an estate sale this weekend and tell them that I'm here to look at the smalls so they know that I'm serious and I know what I'm doing and I mean business.
Well, when you mean business, when you get to, when you're looking at the stuff, the tchotchkes that you have, it's funny because I've learned a lot of stuff. Honestly, I'm not from the estate sale world initially. And so learned a lot about smalls. There's really nice smalls, Lalique, the little figurines and stuff like that. You can find really nice stuff. But then people really like their hovels and other stuff like that. And so one of the biggest things in doing this is setting the client's expectations, because a lot of times people's frame of reference is the stuff that they bought when they bought the cost. Oh yeah, I bought this painting when I was on that Norwegian cruise trip, 12 years ago. And that for appraisal purposes, it was appraised at this amount. It's like, well, that's great. But the reality is that painting today, that painting right now is worth this. And so we have to educate a lot of times people to set expectations. And so one of the things we train to is what to look for with clients. We call them red flags, not clients, but the overall situation. There are certain things that you want to say yes to in terms of the sale. And then there's things you don't want to say yes to, because once you sign that contract, it's yours, baby. You've got it. And so we try and train our owners to avoid those things, then to look for the ones where they can do their best show at really great value.
Of course, everyone thinks everything they own is worth a ton of money.
Oh, heck yeah.
I could see that being a battle.
The Hummels and Beanie Babies and all the other stuff. And, I also learned this thing, which is interesting, is I never realized the amount of decorations America has. Holiday decorations. Right now, everyone you go to, you're going to like Christmas decorations. Every house, Halloween decorations, you got it. And so with all of our sales, there's always decorations kind of stuff like that people are looking to sell.
I think about my attic. It's all holiday. It's all seasonal stuff.
Careful about attics when you're sizing up the house too. We're always training about looking at what you've got in that house and looking at you're looking at the basement. You're looking at the attic. There could be trash up there. There could be treasure up there. And you've got to look at it. But I got to tell you that if you haven't done your homework and looked at it, going up in the middle of here in Raleigh in the middle of summertime up into an attic, digging through stuff and trying to figure out what you have is not a fun experience.
I can imagine.
So we train to look before you jump in and then make sure you can do your best work.
You have to have. So there's got to be crazy stories. There's got to be some affair. Some chick walks up. He told me he's leaving all this to me. I've been sleeping with him for 2 years. He hates his wife. Come on, man. There's got to be crazy shit that happens.
I'll tell you the crazy stuff. Okay. So the crazy stuff is not. Sometimes it could be the customers. Depending on how the economy is, customers are very, very competitive. Depending where the market is, people are looking for items. And so I've actually personally almost seen a fist fight. Okay, one of the first sales I went to, two guys were running. And I kid you not, they both ran through the door, went running back to the China of all things. And then next thing you know, you hear this hubbubaloo going on. And it's like, oh my God, that isn't cool. You shouldn't have gotten in front of me like that. We're able to talk about it off the ledge, but they wanted those items because they're resellers. They want to get it. They're looking for the right deal. They want to get it first. And so there is a discipline about what we do with these events. When people get there, you can't just go walk in at the very beginning. We have a numbering system. People take tickets. It's very coordinated because what'll happen is people will want to cut the line or do other stuff. And so we have to maintain integrity because we have our people that come every week. This is the program. Follow the routine. And that's how we create order. And it was really, really critical for us during COVID. And even now with bigger sales, we want to have a controlled experience. And so we want to be able to make sure clients have time or customers have time to look at the stuff, touch the stuff. We don't want people to be rushed, but we also want to keep the line moving. And so it's kind of a balancing act, right? And so it's real fun when you've got 400, 500, 600 people going through a house like that to coordinate them along. You really got to stay on your game.
Is that a realistic number? Over a two-day period, you could have, on average, over 500 people walking through a home.
I wouldn't say on average. It's absolutely possible, yeah, because the number of views, we'll have thousands of eyeballs. And so usually our numbering system up front, if you go to estate sales around here, it would not be surprising if you saw probably 75 to 100 people in line just to start off at the very beginning. And so people will be coming up like that. And over the course of a day, we will see hundreds of people coming through. And if it's a bigger house, yeah, 500, 600 people or something like that. Because remember, it's over 2 days. People are coming. Sometimes people will come back. We have people too that will like to come back for the value, right? They're looking, they want to see what's there and they want to get the value. And so they'll wait maybe to discount day. The trick is if you don't buy it now, it may not be here on discount day.
That's right. I'd be there day one. I watched three Blue Moon videos on YouTube. It's actually really well done. Very orchestrated and staged. You know, the definition of staging, like you, it makes you want to buy it.
Well, when I went the first time, I went to an estate sale we were doing in Skokie, Illinois. And what was really cool is first time we'd done that in that area. And I went in and I was walking around my Blue Moon shirt on. Lady said, came up really nice lady. And she said, oh, you're Blue Moon. What do you do? I told her my position. She goes, oh, this is so nice. It's so easy to find stuff around here. Cliff, to your point, we've spent a lot of time on the signage and the look of the sales. We redid that a few years ago, and it really has made things pop. It makes it really easy to conduct the sale. And so she liked the shopability, and that's really that's my vision for what I would like to see across the country is every one of those sales is consistent, the same experience. And that leads to my second story. I walked out of that house, and this guy came up, and he said, oh my God, so exciting you guys are here. What? You knew about Blue Moon here in Skokie, Illinois? Yeah, my daughter goes to UNC, and every time I'm down there, we'd love going to the events down there. They're great. He was taking that experience he had down here, and he was transferring that over to what he would get there. That's the vision. We want that same kind of experience from Los Angeles to Portsmouth, New Hampshire. The stuff will be different, but people should be able to go to a Blue Moon sale and have the same kind of look and feel.
That's very cool. Otherwise, it's just a garage sale, right? It's the difference between a garage sale and a highly orchestrated, organized, sophisticated shopping experience, right?
You hit it right on the head. That's exactly it. That is what we're not. If people ask, you know, because people a lot of times don't know what an estate sale is. Oh, you're like a garage sale. No, we're different. Here's what a garage sale is. Here's what we do. And we spent a lot of time educating people because people's thoughts of an estate sale, Warren Buffett has an estate, right? So he would need an estate sale, but other normal people don't need an estate sale, right? Or only people that die need an estate sale. And so once you educate people, and you'd be surprised, even realtors and our referral sources, a lot of times we have to educate what we do and how we can add value and help them. Once they get it, we're in. They understand what we can do, but we have to educate them. And then we got to prove our mettle because, again, they're trusting us. They're bringing us in as a trusted resource. So we got to be able to execute time in and time out. Once we do that, we're an invaluable resource.
Cliff, this is one of those. So item seven here, 57,000 to 113,325. Can you be in this business for under 100K, Bob?
Yeah, you can get in. Yeah, you can get in this business for lower than that. We have different options for people when they're buying in under our franchise agreement or FDD. And so it's a low cost of investment model, which appeals to a lot of people. It's also in your home. You don't have to have physical space. People can conduct this out of the house. The biggest costs are the upfront costs, you know, that we disclose in our FDD. You've got the costs for the materials, the signage, the marketing kits, all those things. You've got the initial marketing investment you're putting in. Probably if you're buying a vehicle, you're getting a trailer hitch, stuff like that. But you don't have a lot of fixed overhead in this model. And that's one of the things that makes it nice. This is, don't have a lot of fixed overhead, don't have accounts receivable. I've been to other models where you have AR, no AR, it's cash and carry, credit card, no inventory. We have to worry about that. It's not capital intensive. This is all about getting events. It's about building the teams and scaling, right? And then you're able to do that without having to add a lot of fixed expense. That's the challenge, is you got to be able to scale it and get the clients.
I have some numbers here, but I don't know what's in your item 19. Are you able to talk about average sale and how some of your franchisees are performing?
Yeah, I can tell you that in our item 19, we disclose on the sales. We have the high end of the range. We just have our first location. Last year did over $1 million. Our second in our history. So hit $1 million. The higher end owners that have been in business for up to their third year, the average in there is approximately $550,000, if memory serves correctly. So, you know, it takes time to build it up. We don't disclose the average amount. Typically, though, I will tell you that for a newer owner, you will start out taking smaller sales. We're not judgmental because you've got to build that experience. You don't have necessarily established the relationships, and you can protect the profitability if you follow our model. But over time, we see that average will go up. So it's a combination of the average going up and getting more events. And the two of those together is really what allows the owners to grow their business and to get to the higher levels.
That's great.
First $1 million producers.
And we're seeing a lot of our owners, they're having success. Once you've cracked the code, you've started doing the events, you're building up, and it's a snowball effect, right? And so we're looking at other things for the model. We are piloting potentially additional services that we can add on to the model. We want to stay in our lane. So we are looking at opportunities here to expand where it makes sense to offer additional services beyond just the estate sale. And again, we don't want to be going out of our lane. So if it's out of our knitting, we're not going to do it. But we do think that there is other opportunities for us to find other ways for franchisees to have additional revenue.
I was going to ask you that. All right. So right now it's the estate sales. That's the revenue.
Estate sale. That's like move management. Yeah. Move management, packing, move coordination, things like that.
I thought you were going to tell me you were charging the buyer with the trailer. It's like, oh, you want the furniture? Pay us $100. We'll move it in the trailer.
Moving is something we look at. We'll partner sometimes locally with movers and stuff, which is another thing that we can coordinate helping on the clear out movers. So we can be valuable to our other resources in the area. But no, I think the areas are be tied in with the transition period, because when somebody goes from the period of, hey, holy cow, we're moving, to the time needing an estate sale, think of all the things that happen in between there, the kinds of needs that people could have.
Absolutely.
And so guess what? We're there up front. And so our ability to go ahead and do that and to coordinate things makes it a seamless transition for the client. We want to be there to help. And so wherever we can meet the client's needs is what we want to do. And if it happens to be an estate sale, so be it. But you know, our goal again is to help the client meet their needs and then make the referral source happy.
Just becoming a realtor. I would just become a realtor and list the houses that I'm selling.
We've helped sell houses. We can bring a lead to a realtor because our listing, someone saw it, they came and they were interested and then they bought the house. Not only did we do a great estate sale, we made a realtor happy. And so it's all about taking care of our referral sources.
Bob, you're the money guy. Quick question as a KPI. If I was a franchisee, what is your labor guidance to me? Do not allow labor to become X percent of your revenue. What would your guidance be?
I would be hesitant to quote on that. My guidance, though, would be the hours. So I'm going to go off the hours, not the percentage, because you know, we don't disclose the labor and the FDD. But I would tell you that the tools we use, we will go through and walk through that house to control the labor. So each room, how long should this room take? How long should that room take? And then we track to the labor hours. The percentage will vary a lot because it'll depend on the size of the sale. Bigger sale, right? The labor percentage could be lower. If you have to put more labor onto it, that could make the percentage higher. Other factors would be how good is your team trait? There's a lot of different variables that go into it. But we focus more on the actual controlling the hours and making sure that those are tight. And then the way you compensate for that is obviously how you price stuff. We trade around pricing, right? it is what it is on the labor. You've got to be tight on your labor, and then you have to price accordingly. We have a balancing act because our goal is we want to clear the house. We want to get the best check to the client, but we have to have a compelling value to the customers. And so we need to make sure that we are striking a good value for the customers. We don't want to go too low and give it away. Too high, we're not going to sell anything. Just right there. And then we got to calibrate expectations of the client and the customer to make it happen. Piece of cake, right? That's all you got to do.
Nice.
Sounds easy.
Yeah, you make it sound easy.
I wish.
I like it, Cliff. I mean, this is another, you know, we've talked so much about aging baby boomers, graying of America. The staffing model is what would prevent someone from doing that. And I like these other ways of kind of capitalizing off of that need.
Love it.
Right? These people leaving their homes. It's just another way of doing that.
One last thing I will mention too. You know, I did mention part of Best Life Brands. And our sister companies, one of the other nice things is that we're in the senior continuum of care. And so our sister companies are Comfort Care, Care Patrol, Boost, and Next Day Access, which we just acquired for mobility. So we've started to see synergies or the ability to go ahead and to work with our referral partners. So if you take someone who's going into a facility, Care Patrol, for example, is something that where we're able to do that. And so we can partner with them in the marketplace. And so it's been nice to watch the kind of, as we've built up Best Life Brands, is opportunities for more synergies cross-marketing. And so we're starting to see that as the system gets bigger and bigger. And
yeah, very cool.
That is cool. I like the model. Justin, I agree with everything you said. When I say senior care, people automatically go to home care, right? No, there's assisted living, there's mobility, there's a senior handyman services, there's estate sales services, there's estate planning. There's a lot that goes into all of this. I like this as a subcategory. To one of our favorite themes is the graying of America, and this fits perfectly right in there. It was good meeting with you. It was good getting to know the brand. I think I have a solid handle on it. I hope the audience does. This was worth listening to. Thank you very much, Bob.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, Bob.
It's been a blast. Thank you. I really appreciate the time. And if you have any other questions, don't hesitate.
Excellent.
And if you have some time this weekend, go visit your local Blue Moon Estates. Go buy, pick something up.
Oh, yeah.
Go elbow someone in the face for a Hummel. I'm going to go with my wife. And that'll be fun.